I've been really fortunate to build up a name for myself by working with pretty credible names immediately. I've been able to be published in local publications. It's called the Edmonton Community Foundation. It's a small magazine that's inside of Edify. To be able to work with artistic directors can already be like a big hurdle and a big first step to surpass. But really my biggest achievement that I was fortunate for was being contacted by The Fringe. And so being able to create the design for that, to have something that's very recognizable in the city, can really be a huge step up. So, you know, building those early client relationships is something that I'm incredibly grateful for. I'm hoping that through this, I'm able to meet some other people as well. Incredibly grateful to have found that within the past year. Also recognizing that a lot of companies and organizations are coming out of this hard bracket of time with the pandemic, and that not everyone has this kind of budget, and yet we still are taking time to find visuals and music or investing in tech so that they can continue business despite what their budget might be looking for. It has not gone unnoticed. I'm really grateful.
This is episode 5 of Kevin Talks Tech, a conversation with Serena Tang. In this episode of Kevin Talks Tech, I'll give you a sense of what to expect in regards to this episode, and I'll cover some of the latest tech news stories and give my take on them. Then I'll have a conversation with Serena Tang, who's an Edmonton-based graphic designer and illustrator. You can find her at serena-tang.com, and I'll put that in the show notes. Kevin Talks Tech consists of 3 parts. First, we'll look at the latest tech news, and I'll provide my thoughts on why I think you should care. Secondly, in this episode, I'll talk to Serena Tang a little bit later. In the general sense, we'll chat about their home-based business, where they may simply be working from home, and how they got started. Then I'll ask them what they hate and love about their technology, and if we have time, I'll answer a tech-related question if they have one. Don't worry about scrambling to write everything down. You'll find show notes, links, and a transcript over at kevintalkstech.ca. You've likely received one or many text messages lately that seem to be trying to reach the wrong number. They seem clearly intended for someone else, and you might even feel compelled to reply, given a specific situation described. You might even think that the person that this message is intended for isn't receiving it, and that they shouldn't miss this message. Make no mistake, it's a scam, and they're trying to play off your emotions. They won't say who they are, but they might lie about it. And they are trying to sell you something, be it cryptocurrency or otherwise. Please, don't fall for this. The situation that they're describing is fake, and the sole purpose of their communication with you is to try to sell you something. The best thing you can do is not respond. Block that number. I have linked to the NBC News story in the show notes of this episode. When I and many others signed up for Instagram years ago, it was to see photos from people we know or choose to follow and have conversations regarding that content. In recent years and months, Instagram has chosen to mimic features of TikTok with a focus on videos and algorithm-fed content solely to get views, drive up engagement, and drive up profits. But this isn't what most of us signed up for, and it's not what we want. Thankfully, there's been massive backlash, and the company is walking back some changes, for now. I have a couple of tips for you regarding Instagram to make it more usable, at least for now and for as long as they allow it. To stop seeing suggested posts for 30 days, select the 3 dots above any suggested post and tap Hide Suggested Posts for 30 days. In your main feed, you can also add a limited amount of people that you follow to what are called your favorites. And that option appears when you tap Instagram in the top left as well, and that should help. That way, you'll only see people that you have selected as favorites in that particular feed. You can find the Verge article on what's happening with Instagram in the show notes. Is there a tech news story you think I should cover? Please email me at news@kevintalkstech.ca. You can also find that in the show notes. You will notice that I'm not promoting my videos and blog posts from kevincanfixit.ca in this episode. I'm in the process of pivoting my business to make it better for you. I will still serve home businesses and residential customers. I'll also be changing my business name. I'll provide more details in the coming weeks, both in episodes of this podcast and on my website, kevintalkstech.ca. If you have any questions or concerns, please email me at hello@kevintalkstech.ca. You can also go to the website and contact me there. You can also find out more about what's going on and the changes I'm making through my social media. You can find me on Twitter at KTTPod, on Instagram at KTTPod, and on Facebook at Kevin Talks Tech Podcast. I'll link to all of these in the show notes. Now, here's my conversation with Serena Tang. All right, on we go. Here's my conversation with Serena Tang. This episode's guest is Serena Tang. Serena started off in Hong Kong, China, and then her family moved to the current city of Edmonton, Alberta. She attended the University of Alberta in 2009. She graduated with a Bachelor of Arts majoring in Art and Design. She focuses on visual arts through illustration and painting, her two mediums of choice while in school. Acrylic and oil are both used on her canvases, applied in abstract shapes and in bright pigments. She's also a graphic designer. Without further ado, let's go to that conversation. Thank you so much for joining me today, Serena, on Kevin Talks Tech. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, perfect. I'm so glad you're here. I really am. Can you tell me a little bit about yourself and your business?
Yes, absolutely. So as a little bit of an introduction, my name is Serena Tang, and I am an Edmonton-based illustrator. I do different kinds of work, but illustration is my bread and butter and my main wheelhouse.
So in the notes that you sent me, you said that in order to start doing art as work, it meant that you had to start your own business, which apparently has to be done most of the time. In your second year, you changed to university and then eventually started doing freelance work after you graduated. And then you could join a company if you wanted to, I suppose, but that happens a lot. That's less common than starting your own business in order to create your art and sell your art. Why did you choose to go that route?
So generally, the work that you might find if you wanted to be in a company is few and far between. A lot of the times we do shorter projects when a company contracts us for something. And so to gain those skills, it's best to just get started on your own. And then you have a good portfolio, which then can in turn get the attention or you know, give you a nice leg up when you do try and find those jobs with the company. It also allows you to have a lot of freedom, because with art and for drawing, it's your style is a really strong tool for yourself. So by being able to develop that and be able to do it in a way that's also very efficient and to create really interesting graphics, it takes time to build that up, as with any skill, right? Whether it's through schooling or it's through something that you learn on your own, that is something that we really have to develop. And so when you take some time and also kind of become your own business, you learn some other tips and tricks along the way, but it's a very common path that we take and we kind of have to accept. And it's fine. You get, of course, to be your own boss. You can experiment in different ways, whether you choose to do individual contracts, or perhaps you prefer to make items that you have different quantities of and you go to markets instead. There is a good variety with it too. So it's a very interesting type of work. That so far has been pretty positive, but there's ups and downs, as with any other profession.
Yeah, quite the adventure, and it's quite the risk, I might add, to start a business, right? I mean, I'm doing it, I know, but you could have gone and done something else. I mean, it's not a path for the I won't say for the weak, but it's on a path. You have to be in a certain mindset and have certain resources, I suppose, in order to pursue what you're doing and frankly what I'm doing. Not that we're really well off or anything, but at the same time, it's I just think that that's important to recognize, because so many people do go work for someone else. That's what they feel the need to do. So to start off on one's own can be pretty daunting, honestly. So it's fascinating that each person that I talk to who has done that, whether they're an artist or whatever it is they're doing, working from home, why they chose to dive into that. So it sounds like you've definitely had your motivations and your passions.
Yeah, it's definitely not easy. I have thought about doing this as my full-time career for a very long time. I often, or when I started this journey, I told myself, you know, this would always be more part-time work. I would have my main source of income, and that was super okay. I anticipated that. I prepared, or I had that prepared in my mind as I was going through my schooling. It wasn't really until recently that I realized I'm in a position where I don't have too many dependents, and I took the risk. The worst I can do is recognize after maybe like a few years that it's not as beneficial, and then I move on. Because I think one thing I really appreciate about the thinking currently in our world is that we no longer need to stick to just one career path and stay in that course. We have a lot more flexibility. If we can be forgiving of ourselves that maybe not everything is a success, I'm happy to have different paths throughout my lifetime. I don't potentially anticipate this being my rest of my work until I retire, but I appreciate that it's no longer as much of a stigma, and it's a lot more embraced, you know, to try different things. So I kind of just say, this is the point of my life where I'm going to give this a try, and we'll just see how it goes.
Okay. So you're putting the hours into this work that it's a full-time, or are you doing kind of part-time hours right now to build it up?
So I am of this year now, I have done it full-time for 1 year. Okay. I have a little bit of work that is related enough to illustration that would supplement it, but most of my time is dedicated to work that would be tied to drawing. You know, it might be a little bit more administrative or in meetings in order to just discuss the idea to get it done, but it's still related to the drawing portion of everything. Right. And I'm happy that it's been going decently well. So
can you tell me, what do you hate about, or at least dislike about your technology, and why?
So with our industry, we talk about certain technologies that are industry standard. And I'm pretty certain that we are not the only kind of career that have these kind of terms. For us, a lot of it is the Adobe suite. So if you want to catch the eye of clients or work with people on a team later on, they expect you to be familiar with these softwares. The issue is that the company who owns them are very well aware of this and have put a very high price tag, in my opinion, for usage. And while the software itself is pretty powerful, you can do a lot with it. It does put up some barriers, especially for people who are not at a high enough income level that they can start investing in this and learning those skills. So it's one frustration that I find, that there is a level of privilege that you need to have sometimes to be a part of this industry. And I find that really unfair, because art and creation is something that I think we can all try, whether it's just you treat it more as a hobby or you treat it as a career. I think there should be a little bit more accessibility. And it makes me sad that there is such a high price tag for software that can give you so much creative freedom.
Yeah, very, very well said. Those are very fair concerns.
And it's my respective response to how I feel about Adobe. I have other feelings about it, but on a podcast, that will be my official statement.
Yes, we all have our grievances, don't we?
Exactly.
Yes. It's a very valid point. I mean, the cost to start up a company, to start up a business, especially on your own, can be extraordinary. And I should know. I won't say how much I've spent. It's more than I expected to. And thankfully, I was able to find that funding to do that. There's a sense of privilege there as well, to be able to achieve that, to get that funding, to get the resources you need to get up and running. What things cost, whether it's hardware, whether it's software, these different things that we need along the way, subscription costs, as you talk about. You don't see some of it coming, right? And you need it. So you find a way to get it. And it can be, you know, at times prohibitive to people, and even cause them to stop, right? Where you run out, you know, you gotta, okay, well, I guess I'll come back to this at some point. And, you know, it can kind of defeat them in that sense. So I'm very glad that you and I have been able to so far, you know, move past that and make it work. All right. That's my rant, I suppose, about that. What do you love about your technology and why?
So similar to the question I answered in the questionnaire that you sent, the thing I really enjoy about digital illustration, which is a specific stream of art as a career, means that I actually have flexibility to work with people, not just in my own city, but also across the world. So it will take time to build networks such as that. But there's that flexibility with it that I think is very, very advantageous to this line of work. It also is just something that's very fascinating to be able to connect with people in a way that is pretty contemporary. We have internet at our disposal, be able to work on something with someone that you probably will never meet in person. That's fascinating. So I find that to be just something that will continue to be just something that fascinates me. I recently did a simple drawing for someone, but they're all the way in Australia. And that also just made me think like, oh, what's the style that they prefer over there? So it also like changes my mindset on things. Without my laptop and like my tablet and being able to send files virtually and in a way where things may not be as compressed, right? To have software to be able to send larger files. This is something that's, that I'm really appreciative of, that we have technology to support this kind of work.
No kidding. It's not just a nice to have, you kill time with it, but it's become very beneficial in terms of how we use it on a day-to-day basis in business and life through COVID, I'll just say it, to have the internet speeds that we do, have it be as reliable as it is in many cases anyway, to almost take it for granted for what it has, you know, become. And yeah, absolutely incredible. I'm fascinated with technology every single day. It's part of the reason I'm doing what I'm doing. Whether you're in Edmonton or if you're in Australia, I could be talking to someone just the same and having an interview like this or a conversation like this. And that's absolutely fascinating because they're far away. You know, that's quite the distance. And to connect with people that way, as you have done for your work, I can't get over how incredible that is. It blows me away. I'm fascinated by it.
Yeah, I'm sure if your podcast keeps picking up and you start having listeners who aren't local, you know, you're like, wow, this is amazing. But also like, how did you find me?
It's always interesting to hear the answer, isn't it?
You know, having search engines that are able to pull something up that you may not have wanted to search, but it's like a happy accident when you find it. Another amazing thing that forever kind of like entranced by on the internet, like the things that you can find because of technology.
Yes. Very much so. Like I say, it's become a utility, it's become a need, you know, like electricity or running water. What would you consider to have been the hardest year of your business so far and why?
This past year would have definitely been my hardest year, but also very rewarding, mainly because I decided to take this on as my full-time form of income. And so when you are making that shift, of course, you don't really know what the future has in front of you. There's only so much you can really plan for. So you have enough savings to keep a roof over your head and keep yourself fed. But I tend to not really enjoy that uncertainty, even though I enjoy the, even though I enjoy the industry. So that was the challenge I had to take on, and to just know that it will take a little bit of time and not everything happens instantaneously, even though we have, you know, this form of technology in front of us where we get a lot of instant gratification. There's still other things in life that are a long-term investment. But otherwise, despite not knowing what kind of work I would have in the next month or so, I was able to connect with lots of people who took a chance in me and had seen my portfolio and felt confident in that to do some pretty exciting work where I still feel like I'm relatively fresh in this area. It's difficult just because, unlike other type of work, you don't know what next month's number is going to be. You don't know what next month's level of hours are going to be. And sometimes it might be many hours and not a number for income that you really enjoy. You just hope that it evens itself out as you continue on going, that your average gets better.
Absolutely. It's nerve-wracking, isn't it?
So scary. Sometimes you wake up and you're like, what am I doing today? I'm doing stuff today, right?
I better be doing stuff today. Yeah. it's been nerve-wracking for me too, Serena.
Yeah, we're all getting through this together, and we all build our foundation in different ways. You know, your right. foundation is having that content ready to go and probably trying to put it out at some form of schedule. Yeah. For us, it's having that portfolio. And because when you're meeting that client, you haven't drawn it yet. Right. Ideally, you don't. You have to be able to have enough skill to convince them. You're like, I will be able to do this for you, that we can agree on this contract. And so that's our form of prep. And then ideally, as you go on, the work that you do for clients then becomes a portfolio, so you don't have to invest other time to make new pieces. So it's all the same, right? We're all developing our skills, making sure that we can communicate and show that we can do certain work. And hopefully that is that nice base that continues our career.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And I just wanted to touch on something that you said in your notes here, as far as the kind of the hardest part of the job, not just the hardest year you've had. You talk about the physical fatigue that many people just don't consider. An illustrator puts in the same amount of level of pain and soreness as being on your feet when you, I guess you worked in service and retail, despite being at your desk, right? Not to minimize it. But after a long week, you're saying you especially have sore arms and achy wrists where you have to wear braces for it. And you're saying this is very common for illustrators because of how much you're drawing, how much time you're spending at the desk. So that's fascinating to me. Curious if you can touch on that.
Yeah, absolutely. It is no joke that any form of movement, like even someone who does administration and you're on a keyboard and you're typing, we are learning more about the fatigue that our bodies go through with the type of desk work that has become a lot more common nowadays. But especially for artists, it leads to really early carpal tunnel. There's one thing that is beneficial about creating artwork in a traditional form, or maybe a little bit bigger, say like on a canvas and you're standing in front of it, you get more motion from your full arm, as opposed to someone who's sitting at a desk, you're relying on your motion really only up to about your elbow. And so a lot of really small gestures are coming from your wrist. And when you're doing that professionally for hours a day, that is going to really start compounding after weeks and months and potentially years. And so when I used to be a teaching assistant, I had students who had to take days off to just rest. I remember when I was in school, I would have days where I was legitimately worried about getting carpal tunnel, and I had to start icing and doing good stretches every single day before and after drawing to take care of my wrists. And so we try and talk about that a lot more and make sure that people have good health and take breaks so that they don't end up injuring themselves. And then realizing that if they can't recover from that injury, they've put this handicap on themselves that will heavily affect their career. And that can be really devastating. So we try and talk about that a lot more now. Show good wrist stretches.
Yeah. Yeah. I hear you.
We encourage this for all types of people who sit at desks and work. Please stretch all parts of your body, actually.
Yeah, not just stretch either. I mean, listen to your body. We all have the distractions around us, but like for myself, I'm fortunate enough to have a porch and a deck I can go to. So I think of that. You know, I have a cat that needs to be fed. I have to, you know, get up and do a chore around the house, you know, vacuum or whatever it is, fill the dishwasher, etc. And it doesn't have to be a lot, but to take, you know, 5 minutes, 10 minutes, half an hour, if that's what you need, right? And going and doing something else, even leaving the house, biking or walking or whatever your preference there is, but to recognize that, because especially as we get older, hate to touch on that, but it's a fact. But of course, it's a different strain and it's a different pressures, different level of pain, discomfort. that we have to keep in mind in terms of working on our devices, on our computers, right? It's still strain. It's still hard. It's not manual labor hard, maybe, but it takes a toll. But the repetitive nature of that, and you know, knowing your limits and having that balance and forcing yourself to do that, because otherwise, like you say, you could get injured if you don't respect your body.
I can quickly go through the equipment. Yeah. So in terms of hardware, my main go-to is I use a Wacom Intuos Pro. And so I use a type of drawing tablet. There's two main types. The two main types is that some people like to draw, say, on an iPad Pro. And so your tablet is also your monitor. So you can see exactly where your pen is meeting. And then so you can see the mark. Or other people, such as myself, use a tablet that connects to a computer, or also a tablet, or also another type of iPad/tablet device. And you're drawing on the designated tablet, and then you can see your mark translated onto the screen. And so a lot of it comes down to personal preference and also budget. For me, it's a physical adjustment. And so I find that my posture is better when I'm able to have my hand down and I'm looking at my screen. Sometimes it can be a bit of a translation issue because you're not used to that. My counter argument is that you are able to type without looking at your fingers most of the time because you practice. Therefore, you can translate that into drawing and then looking at a monitor. So a little bit of practice, and
that's you don't have fair to and a bit of a habit, I might add. I've heard those conversations on podcasts, as it turns out, and people kind of talking about the work they're doing and how they're doing it.
You'd be surprised how fast you can pick up on it. Again, it's simply just practice. You get used to certain motions. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's those are my go-to types of hardwares currently. And then, as I briefly mentioned, I have to use products through the Adobe Creative Suite so that I can let my clients know what kind of files they'll be accepting.
Yes. Expectations are good.
Yeah, it's fine. I just account for it as part of my work.
It is, but yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So Serena, in contrast, what has been the best year of your business so far and why?
Am I allowed to say the same timeline?
Sure.
Okay. I'm a firm believer that when you go through some obstacles, you can also reap the rewards. And so generally overcoming that, you find success, or you at least realizing the amount of effort that you put in, and you find that to be relatively positive because you overcame that. Even with the uncertainty, I've been really fortunate to build up a name for myself by working with pretty credible names immediately. I've been able to be published in local publications. It's called the Edmonton Community Foundation. It's a small magazine that's inside of Edify. To be able to work with artistic directors can already be like a big hurdle and a big first step to surpass. But really my biggest achievement that I was fortunate for was being contacted by The Fringe. And so being able to create the design for that, to have something that's very recognizable in the city, can really be a huge step up. So, you know, building those early client relationships is something that I'm incredibly grateful for. I'm hoping that through this, I'm able to meet some other people as well. Incredibly grateful to have found that within the past year. Also recognizing that a lot of companies and organizations are coming out of this hard bracket of time with the pandemic, and that not everyone has this kind of budget, and yet we still are taking time to find visuals and music, or investing in tech so that they can continue business despite what their budget might be looking for. It has not gone unnoticed. I'm really grateful that my industry has not fizzled out despite maybe some monetary issues over the past few years.
Yeah, really good points. To find ways to accommodate that, right? As you're saying, still keep the roof over your head and the, you know, and keep you fed is important. And glad that you've been able to find clients, partners to do that, so you're not stressing out so much, because goodness knows we all went through enough of that.
Absolutely. You know, for what it's worth, I think during these past 2 years, we recognize that content creators are incredibly essential to find entertainment, whether to pass time or to have something more positive to focus on when we're surrounded by a lot of things that stress us out. I think has really been helpful to folks that do any kind of content creation. I'm hoping that we recognize that and also make sure that people are properly acknowledged and also paid for. But I have so much respect for every form of content creator or just a person who like takes a risk and does this either part-time as a hobby or full-time.
What does the future hold for your business?
So currently I have a few long-term projects going on, which is really exciting. One of them is using my skills to create merch for not necessarily an original creation for myself, but I'm lending my illustration skills to help this team build up a really nice line. And so that's a skill that I actually never really thought about doing. I have done a lot of my own personal work for a long time. So I'm excited to really work on that team and be able to be really seamless in another style. Otherwise, I'm continuing to work with a lot of local people and just create visuals and illustrations for them, just to be able to stay in the community, but also contribute to something that I personally can see and be a part of, which is something I find super rewarding, to be able to have like a tangible connection with something that I've made digitally. And otherwise, if I were to shoot for the moon, I really want to break into doing illustrations for published books. I think that is something that has always caught my eye. I love going through a bookstore and seeing all the covers. And I know the phrase that you can't judge a book by its cover, but I definitely gain a feeling of what it might entail from said cover. And I think you should. I think it should be a little bit of a teaser, whether it's through the photo that they use or the way that they decided to have the typeface of the title. So I would say that's probably on my horizon, but I'm really happy to say I'm keeping busy and we'll see where this takes me.
I like it.
We'll see how it goes. My plans could change every 6 months. I do a 6 month evaluation every time and I go, what are we doing? What's the return on interest? And so far, we're still going.
We're still going. Yeah. Yes. Wonderful. All right, Serena. So before I let you go, can you tell people where they can find you online?
Yes. So you can search for my name, Serena Tang Illustrator. I do show up and you can see my portfolio on there if you would like to see some of my artwork. On Instagram, my handle is itsmeserena_T. And so sometimes I post a few more casual illustrations as I'm working on stuff that doesn't necessarily need to be a full piece on my website. I also like to talk about a lot of Edmonton things, a lot of transit related things or just events on Twitter. My username is Unicorn Wheels and it's a silly one and I've thought about changing it, but my friend said that it's whimsical. So I have kept it because my friends have requested it.
Alrighty. And what is your website?
Oh, my website is serena-tang.com.
Serena-tang.com. Awesome. Thank you for making time to join me today, Serena. I appreciate it.
Yes, thank you for this conversation. It was an excellent end to my day.
Thank you. Thank you, Serena.
Thank you, Kevin.
I really had fun talking to Serena. Once again, you can check out her website, which I've included in the show notes. I'd like to reflect a bit on some of the conversation that Serena and I had. Serena talked about how starting off on one's own, starting a small business or home business, is quite daunting. So you definitely need to have your motivations and your passions. She's been working full-time for a year now, which is wonderful. Starting a small business or home business is absolutely daunting. It's more time, work, and energy than a lot of people realize. If you're not self-motivated and passionate about it, you'll give up. If you're determined enough and smart enough to reach out for help when you need it, you'll get there. I like how she talks about how we need to be flexible and forgiving with ourselves, and that not everything will be a success. In fact, from the podcasts I've listened to and articles I've read and conversations I've had, people often have more failures than successes. We just hear more about their successes. That's just how we learn, and there's no way around it. But we must view these experiences as a learning and do our best to recover from them so that we can strive for our next success. She talks about how to be a creative person. You need to be privileged enough to afford the software. That doesn't mean you need to be rich, but you need to be privileged enough. That puts barriers in front of creative people who simply can't afford what they need to try and be successful. I know. In my business, I am very grateful that over the past few years, I've been able to get the technology I need to do what I'm doing. That is certainly a privilege. Without it, I couldn't pursue my passion or work from home. The same goes for illustrators, graphic designers, and many more. Often the barrier to entry before you even get started is getting the basic technology in place these days to enable you to do what you want to do. Serena appreciates all that technology has given her access to in terms of clients around the world. She recently did a drawing for someone in Australia. In my own experiences, I've talked to people across town, across Canada, and even in Australia years ago. And beyond an ever so slight delay at the time in terms of the connection, they might as well have been sitting next to me. That's incredible. I really appreciate her point on how when starting a business, you don't always know what next month is going to be like, how many hours you'll have to put in, or how much work you'll have. You just hope it'll be enough to keep you housed and fed for now, and that your average hours and the amount of work you'll get will make up for it over time. Next, in episode 6 of Kevin Talks Tech, we have another two-parter. We'll hear from Heather Lyon, who provides training for small businesses on how to use accounting software. She'll also have some fascinating stories about doing just that while traveling in the Northwest Territories. Thank you for taking the time to watch or listen to this episode. I really appreciate it. If you have any tech questions that I can answer in a future episode or feedback, please feel free to email me at kevintalkstech.ca. We'll see you next time.